Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest this morning is Blaine Batchelor. She's an Atlanta-based award-winning writer and editor. Blaine and I will be discussing her new book titled On Being a Batchelor. It is filled with real-life experiences laced with humor and advice for today's bachelor. And by the way, you heard me right. Batchelor is her last name. Good morning, Blaine. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio, and how are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Johnny. I'm doing very well. How are you? Very happy to be here.
I'm doing fantastic. I'm so glad to have you on. Enjoyed reading your book. It was very well written and very heartwarming. And congratulations to you. It just came out last month, right?
It came out in August. So, yes, it's hot off the presses. Thank you.
Let us get started by getting to know a little bit more about you. Please give us a quick walkthrough about your life from childhood to the present moment.
Okay, I will try to do this in less than the Reader's Digest version.
Wonderful.
I'm originally from Florida, the panhandle of Florida. I was born in a little town called Valparaiso. And after my brother was born, my mom and my dad moved to London for a couple of years where he had an Air Force assignment over there. So I spent a couple of years there. And then from there, we moved to Washington, D.C., spent about 6 years there, and then back to Florida. So we did a big circle, across the world. And so I really, always say I grew up in Florida. That's my home. And I went to the University of Florida and got my degree in journalism after switching a couple of times, as many college students are wont to do. So I ended up graduating in 1997 with a degree in journalism. From there, I went to my first job at the Tampa Tribune as a newspaper writer. I was a full-time correspondent, which basically means that doing full-time work with no benefits. I was covering high school sports and soccer and some travel stuff and really, really enjoyed that. Then from there, I moved to Texas to work with the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, doing, again, high school sports and soccer and the occasional travel pieces when I would go somewhere and write about it. And then from there, I decided I wanted to live abroad for a year. I just wanted the experience of living in a different country, learning another language, just really experiencing something completely different while I was still young enough to do it fairly easily. So I moved to Barcelona, Spain. I didn't really know anyone there. I just knew that from what I had heard of the culture, it sounded great to me. You know, late nights, a lot of wine drinking, just a very social culture with a zest for life. So I ended up moving to Barcelona and just having a really amazing year. I taught English. I learned Spanish pretty well. And I also began freelancing from over there as well. So that was a really pivotal year for me. When I came back from that was 2001, the end of 2001, and there were really no jobs to be had. Of course, the economy was just in a really bad way after 9/11. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, I decided rather than waste my time trying to find a full-time job in the media industry when there really weren't that many out there, I would just start freelancing. So I lived at home for a while. I waited tables. I started filling up my bank account, and then I moved to Atlanta in November of 2002 and have been freelance writing ever since.
Fantastic. Hey, I have to do this plug in, though.
Sure.
You went to University of Florida, and, of course, I went to LSU. So you guys were tiger bait this weekend.
Yes.
And we did it in the swamp. So
we were. That was
that
painful. Yeah, no, I can dish it out, so I have to be able to take it, too. I'm a huge Gator fan. So congratulations to you. We should have known to block or to go for something on that trick play. It was obvious. It was real obvious that he wasn't going to kick that in as a field goal, so... Yes, moving on. Next question.
Hey, that's who we are, you know? So that's
no, I can take it.
got you into writing?
I had always really enjoyed writing, Johnny. I just, had enjoyed it even as a child, you know, in English class. My mom tells a story that even as a baby, there was this one bookcase that I apparently would always just go over to, just full of books. And I guess it was before I could even walk, I would just go over to this bookcase and pull all the books down and just turn the pages. And I wouldn't ever tear the pages. I just almost treated these books with reverence. So I guess it was just kind of in my genes. I did some journalism in high school. I did yearbook and always, like I said, just really enjoyed English classes and writing. But, I mean, it took me a little bit of exploration to figure out that I wanted to do this for my, you know, for my career. I did go into school starting off as a biomedical engineering major. And after, you know, about a year and a half of chemistry and calculus and all these really hard classes, I really enjoyed them. But I also I took a writing class for basic English credit. It was called MMC 2100, Writing for Mass Communications.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hooked after that. I just knew that I loved this a lot, and that was what I should really do, was follow my heart and follow my passion.
Were you around people that wrote a lot, like your parents or anyone that you knew, or did you have a mentor that helped you along the way?
Actually, my parents are both really strong in math, and I mean, I can't even balance my checkbook. So in terms of family influence, not so much, although my grandfather on my dad's side did do quite a bit of outdoor typewriting, and he really enjoyed it, and I remember he always encouraged me to follow that, and he was always really supportive of that. Of course, too, I had some really great teachers. I had a great teacher in high school, Marilyn McGill. We called her McGill, not even a Mrs. We just called her McGill.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she was a real strong influence for me, too. She'd always said that I'd had a talent and that I could do something with it if I wanted to. So I remember her. You know, and then, of course, I do remember also an advisor in college that just always, you know, really just kind of supported me and pushed me. He was the one that actually keyed in made the computer, you know,
mm-hmm,
switch,
mm-hmm,
like in the system, actually. I remember him telling me, you know, I'm doing this. I'm switching you from engineering to journalism, and I'm slashing your starting salary by tens of thousands. You know, are you okay with this? So I remember him as well. And then editors, too. There's been some editors in mm-hmm. my past who have, you know, who've done a really good job of helping me and improve my writing and write stronger. I mean, it's painful to be told you're not doing something as well as you could, or to be shown that there's a better way that you can do better. But as with any creative field, you know, that's part of it. That's part of the whole kit and caboodle to getting better.
Right. You experienced an early success, though, because when you were here I'm in Dallas, but you were in Fort Worth, Texas,
mm-hmm.
and you won an award for writing about soccer moms. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, yes, that's right. Good memory. I did. That was actually for a really cool little magazine, and I remember the name of the editor, but I can't remember the name of the publication. And that was one of my first real official freelance jobs. And
mm-hmm.
I made quite a bit of money with that little piece back then. I mean, freelancing was paying a lot better than it does now. But I remember thinking, man, there's something to this. So, yes, I mean, it certainly, you know, in terms of mm-hmm. the awards and stuff, obviously those are great, and everybody wishes they had more of those. But
mm-hmm.
a lot of it is just taking the time to apply for them and submit yourself to them. I mean, I had a couple of scholarships in college that I won simply because no one else applied. So,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not saying that's, you know, that's the case for the awards that I've gotten, but, you know, oftentimes it is just, oh gosh, there's, you know, there's this grant or fellowship or award. I should put my name in the ring, throw my hat in the ring for that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I suppose to answer your question that it is, you know, more of a formula. It's you know, there's an inexact science to it, but certainly
mm-hmm.
if you do have, you know, a natural talent, or more importantly, a passion for something, that's what makes it easier to be good at it, because you enjoy it.
That's wonderful news. And one of the other things that I've read about you is that you were in Chile.
Yes.
And you actually wrote about coal mining. And, of course, now the hot topic is about getting the people out of the shaft in Chile.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. That was a trip that I took with some other journalists down to Chile. We visited three big cities there, Concepcion and Santiago, and then there was one more. But one of the day trips that we did was to a little town called Lota, and it was on the coast there, close to the coast. And it was one of the most powerful experiences that I have ever had in my life, travel or not. We did a tour of a previous coal mine. The name of the mine was called El Chiflón del Diablo. And what that means in Spanish is the whisper or the breath of the devil, if I'm translating that properly, which is pretty sinister sounding. And indeed, this mine was very intense. We were hoisted down into the shaft in a metal elevator, and the blackness that you just sink into, and the chink 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 sound that of the elevator as this metal sort of cage went, and just descended, and it just seemed like we were in there forever. And then finally we reached the bottom, and we had a tour by a man named Jorge. He was a former miner, and the tour was in Spanish, and it was just, he did a wonderful job of capturing the history of the mine and the hardships of the people who had worked there. And so we had our hard hats, and we kept going down, and we kept descending and descending, and every time we would approach a shaft, it would get smaller and tighter and narrower, and I would think, the tour's done. We're definitely not going to go through there. We're going back up. And every time he would open a door, or we would go down a more narrow passageway, and toward the bottom, it was quite tight, quite low. People had to duck their heads. You couldn't span your arms out if you wanted to spread your arms, your arm span, you couldn't do that. We were kind of almost duck walking for a bit of the way. And we got to the bottom, and it kind of finally opened up. I mean, if you were claustrophobic, you were going to be in big trouble. and I was claustrophobic, so. It was just a really powerful experience. I will never forget it. And every time there is something in the news about miners or, deaths, so there's been some stuff in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, it's just an absolute tragedy. And it's one that I just feel like I can understand a little bit better and sympathize with more because of that experience. We'll never forget it. We'll never forget it.
You know, one of the things that we talk about and we hear a lot about athletes is mental toughness. And what sometimes people don't realize in this particular case, what I gather from what you have just said and described about those miners. Now, they are not obviously in everyone's hearts and minds, because when you go down about half a mile to a mile down under, so to speak, it takes a tremendous amount of mental toughness to keep up with that.
And I was just, for me, what I really captured from this was that we were down there for a couple of hours, and these miners live, that's their life, that's their livelihood, that's what they do for their whole lives. So you talk about mental toughness, that is mental toughness. I mean, that's a job that you have to absolutely, you got to be tough as nails to do that. My hat goes off to them, and it's really something that I kind of shake my head, because I know kind of the hardships of just a little tour down there. I can't imagine the challenges and the struggles of that kind of a job. That's just something that I just think is incredible. Talk about intestinal fortitude. Miners have it in spades.
Well, as a writer, you had the opportunity to travel and write just about everything out there. What were some of your favorite stories?
From travel writing, there are quite a few. It really has offered me the opportunity. It's been a wonderful, wonderful part of my career to go and see countries that, people have never been to or never even knew were countries. It's the same for me. For some of them, I mean, I didn't know Nevis was a country until I'd never even heard of it until I was approached with the opportunity to go down there and write about it. Some of the ones that really stick out are that Chilean mine experience mm-hmm. that we had just talked about. That really ranks up there. I also was really impressed and I'm amazed by my experience in Colombia. Bogota and Medellin were two of the big cities that I visited down there, but we took a helicopter around some of the provinces and saw the cotton or the coffee fields, and we saw the house where Pablo Escobar had lived.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
But what really captured me the most was the vibrancy and the tenacity of the Colombian people. They've been through a lot of hardships,
mm-hmm.
and they are still some of the most friendly, the most accommodating, the most warm people, and they have just an amazing culture, and their food is just outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
That was a memorable experience. Nevis, again, I mean, that was a little mm-hmm. Caribbean island that I think a lot of Caribbean islands share a lot of the same characteristics, sun, sand, surf. But Nevis just really captured to me something a little bit different. It just had the sugar mills and the plantations and just sort of a neat sensibility to it, just sort of a quiet sophistication to it that I just mm-hmm. really enjoyed. And I was able to hike to the top of a mountain there. It's called Mount Nevis. It's 3,232 feet, 3,232, and mm-hmm. I'm telling you, that was a slog up a muddy mountain. I mean, it was not for the faint of heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I never would have imagined, gosh, mountain climbing in Caribbean. So that was something that I wrote about.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I recently returned from the Dominican Republic, and that was another just amazing country with just such a strong pride. They've got baseball. They've got some fantastic food. They just have a very vibrant way of living, very warm, and I was really taken by that. I'd like to go back. That's one that I definitely would like to return to.
Wonderful. Now, you also wrote about lifestyles, obviously, and one of the mm-hmm. people you had mentioned, you have actually had some conversations with Dr. Ruth about premarital sex.
Yes.
That's interesting, and so that's just wonderful.
Yes. She was doing an event here in Atlanta, and I was able to meet her in person for a magazine interview. So she and I and another a very well-known OBGYN
mm-hmm.
that she does a lot of work with sat down for tea at the mm-hmm. Ritz-Carlton, a very swanky hotel here,
mm-hmm.
Ritz-Carlton on 14th Street. And we had a very frank discussion about sex. And what really impressed me the most about her was just she was so frank about everything and funny and warm. And, you know, here's this Jewish grandmother who has really paved the way for so much understanding and knowledge and groundbreaking just discussion about a topic that, you know, had been taboo for so long. I mean, she mm-hmm. really is the original sexpert, and she is as fiery as ever. I mean, she's tiny. I wasn't prepared for how tiny she is, but she has a huge personality. She just fills up the room. That was another very memorable interviewee in my
mm-hmm.
career.
How did your column evolve to As a Bachelor?
The column involved, it began with a column more about me. It was called On Being a Bachelor, and it
mm-hmm.
ran in that form in a local weekly here in Atlanta called the Sunday Paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it was originally in place. I had always, you know, been interested in sort of writing about dating and had always just had a lot of experience, you know, with bad dates, and so a lot of content to pull from. At the time, we had been running a column called Committed about one of our columnists' sort of married life and her take on married life. And I approached an editor there who happened to be a friend of mine, and I said, look, you know, you've got this huge segment of readers that you're sort of ignoring here. Let me write a column about being single.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, every week I began writing about just sort of what I was experiencing in the dating world, whether it was good, bad, or very, very ugly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you may remember from some of the stuff in the book. I tried not to hold anything back, because when you, you know, when you hold stuff back, you, I don't know, you just, it's just not quite as an authentic experience for your readers, and
mm-hmm.
the way that people are going to connect with you is if you put it out there. So I tried to do that every week. So after about 2 years, you mentioned earlier talking about the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it goes, there's three sections, the single life taken and then a bachelor's 2 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the taken section really is sort of a documentation of my deepening relationship with a guy whose initial is C. Everyone
uh-huh.
in the column and, of course, the book, I use an initial to protect the innocent and then the not so innocent. So things began to get more involved with him.
Mm-hmm.
And my column had gone from single girl in the city to not so single girl in the city over about a 2 year span.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like it had run its course. So I approached my editors with the with the idea of changing it to advice,
mm-hmm.
calling it Ask Bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
And they were cool with that. And
mm-hmm.
It still runs today. It actually runs there and in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be running in hopefully some more newspapers nationwide. It was just picked up by a syndication service. So hopefully we'll be seeing it in more newspapers across the country.
That's fantastic. You know what it reminded me also is about the movie How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Yes. Yes, that was a pretty funny little rom-com there.
Right.
Where she has sort of an assignment,
mm-hmm.
and and he does too,
right.
And they're kind of both approaching this relationship from the standpoint of, from a career perspective as opposed to from their heart, and of course
right.
the disaster / mm-hmm. love that ensues from that.
Your book applies to men and women.
Yes.
I know it's primarily women read a lot about those things and the challenges of dating and the dating scene and everything else, but believe it or not, we guys do have a heart, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And I was just in Charleston this past weekend doing an event, a book signing event, and there was a really nice little review written up in a Charleston online magazine, and the reviewer really captured the essence of that, and so it's nice to hear too that they're, to hear that from a male reader too, that
yeah.
it's, don't be scared off by the pink cover. There really is a lot of good stuff in there for guys too, and it's equally relatable, I think, on matters of the heart, to both sexes, to both genders. So I appreciate you
right.
saying that. It makes me feel good because I've always kind of thought of myself as kind of a guy's girl, and my writing is,
mm-hmm.
is pretty direct. So it helps to, it really is nice to hear that there are male readers out there that it's connecting with. Every time I get a male reader or somebody, who's a guy who buys it, I think that's sort of even more of a victory for me.
Ultimately, we share the same thing. We're all looking for love. We want
yes.
to love, and believe it or not, we want to love first, and then we want to be loved.
Exactly.
And so that's the balancing act that we have. But believe it or not, again, the other side of the equation is the fear factor.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a huge obstacle in
mm-hmm.
matters of the heart, especially... Mm-hmm. After you've been there and you know how bad it can hurt, and it can hurt real bad.
Right.
Sure, there's the fear factor of getting rejected. There's the fear factor of putting your heart out there and having it not, having your feelings not returned as strongly. You know, there's the fear factor of asking someone on a date.
Mm-hmm.
It all stems back to the fear of rejection and not feeling like we're good enough. But
mm-hmm.
That's no reason not to try it again. I mean,
right.
Anybody who's been around a while and kind of has been there, it's like it's the same sort of rejection that you're facing in a career like writing. It's gonna happen. It's
right.
a fact of the matter. So, just sort of knowing that, and knowing that there's other people too that have gone through it, is such a universal thing. And you know, when you say, "Oh, I just broke up with someone," you're going to have someone go, "Oh man, I know how bad that stinks. Let me take you out for a drink to, you know, to talk or whatever."
And you're not alone. This is something that really, actually, in all actuality, it connects all of us together. And one of the things that I like what you wrote in the first segment of the book, The Single Life, you mentioned about a good girlfriend is hard to find. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that really stemmed from a very close friend of mine that I met in Atlanta. We were next door neighbors. We both shared studio apartments. We're about the same age. We connected on, you know, just about every level. And I'm just so happy that we had a chance to meet, even though we only were living in the same city for about, I think about 6 months. And she moved to Sweden to see if she could give it a go with her boyfriend, and it was a huge risk that she took, and it paid off. They're together, they're very happy.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I kind of was the one to kind of tell her, you should go give this a shot. And I think that, you know, she even said that really helped, that I was kind of the support for her.
Mm-hmm.
But in doing that, I lost a really good friend. Not lost, but, you know, lost to geography, a really good friend.
Right.
But the topic of that chapter, sort of the whole essence of it, is that I think that as women get older, it is harder to connect with girlfriends on that really deep level. You know, everyone is so busy in their lives. We have marriages and family and children and jobs and, you know, workout routines and book club and volunteer engagements. And it really is, I think, harder to find time for friendship in that, especially if it's not an established friendship, but, you know, if it's sort of someone new that you have to make the time to get to know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that chapter resonates a lot with women, you know, mid to late 20s, early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certainly finding that it's still true. That's why I miss that friend so much. I mean, she's in Sweden and I'm in Atlanta, and we Skype a lot,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the same as when we lived, you know, on the, you know, 6 inches, you know, of a plaster away from each other, when I could lean out my balcony and say, "Hey, you know, let's have a glass of wine,"
right?
Or, you know, watch. We used to watch that show Nip Tuck together a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it is true, a good girlfriend is hard to find, and but really important to keep around, because those, you know, those women bonds, those good girl bonds, are just a staple of life. They're just an absolute necessity.
Well, you're looking at a support group here.
Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why people who, I think, in, you know, talking in terms of relation sense,
mm-hmm.
oh, well, you know, we don't need anyone, we have each other. That's, you know, that's poppycock.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a support system of like-minded friends. And, you know, deeper girl friendships are, they take time to cultivate. They're rare. So, you know, it's really is important to make time and cultivate those friendships and keep them when you've got them.
What were your parents thinking about when they first saw your column appearing in the papers?
Well, I have to be honest with you. There are times when I was hoping my dad wouldn't read it online. my mom, too, for that matter. And by that, I mean, yes, there is some racy content on there. There's some
mm-hmm.
personal information about my love life on there. Like I said before, I always tried to be as honest as I could,
mm-hmm.
without being too raunchy either, without being, I think that there's a bit of, we've gone overboard, I think, as a society when it comes to sharing too much personal information. And while
right.
I did that, I tried to do it in a way that wasn't offensive or, you know, overly raunchy. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you can still get your point across and be direct about it without, you know, without offending people, without without making people kind of cringe. Although, I'm not saying I haven't done that before. I certainly
mm-hmm.
have, but that said, yes, there were some days that I was really hoping that my dad wouldn't read the column. that week. But those are some of the best columns, I think, too. So, you know, as a writer, you have to be very careful about sort of censoring yourself mm-hmm. because you're afraid of what people will think. Mm-hmm. That's a slippery slope you can get into. But I do have to say that on the whole, my parents have been extremely supportive. I'm so lucky to have parents who supported my decision to be a writer, knowing that the financial stability would be a lot harder to achieve than if I, you know, did go the engineering route or, you know, anything else. I mean, being a freelancer, part of the exhilaration and frustration is that you never know where your next paycheck is coming from.
Right.
And my parents as a whole have been just absolutely a wonderful support system for me throughout the column and the book. I mean, my dad is always saying, I sold another book for you. He talks it up so much. So that's really nice, too.
That's very nice of him to do that. Well,
yes.
The success of your column is based on, obviously, feedbacks from your readers. What are some of the feedbacks that you get?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you get everything. I'm proud to say most of it's positive, but of course you have, you know, anytime you put yourself out there, there are going to be people, there are going to be haters, you know, there are going to be people who find fault with you, think you're just whining about something, think that you don't have any right to be talking about what you're talking about, mm-hmm. think that you're, you know, outright wrong, have a different opinion of you. So that's the sort of stuff you have to kind of let go and let roll mm-hmm. off your back. It's the same thing, like I mentioned before, with any creative endeavor, whether mm-hmm. you're a musician or whether you're a writer or whether you're a pottery artist, you know, what have you. Part of the whole picture for pursuing something that's a passion, that's a creative passion, is that there's going to be people who don't like it because it's a subjective thing. It's not black and white. It's not cut and dry. But for the most part, I hear really good stuff, and there's no bigger compliment that I could hear than I love your column, or I'm really enjoying your book. There really isn't. I mean, it may sound vain. It probably does sound vain, but there's really no bigger compliment that I could have than that validation. That people are enjoying it and people are relating to it. I think if they are enjoying it, it's because they're relating to it, and that means that I you know, at least, you know, fulfilled that challenge as a writer, that I connected with someone, you know, in their mind.
Well, you made a positive difference in your life, and I think that's very, very important, and that's what I got out of it. It validates the things that I went through or the feelings I've had at a certain point in my life. That's okay, because you're not alone. And
sure.
You realize that when it comes from your heart, I used to tell people, as long as I don't have to cross the street when I run into that person, then I'm doing
uh-huh.
it right.
Yeah.
I don't have to run away from the situation, and I think that's the most important thing.
Exactly, and like I said before, I love that this brought up sort of old feelings that you had and sort of, you know, the heartaches or, you know, what have you. That's great. I mean, these are universal topics, and you know, people sometimes say, oh, well, I don't want to read that book because I'm married. And I'm like, no, you need to read that book because you're married, because I'm talking about, number one, you know, relationship situations too. But if you are married, you've probably been through everything in here anyway. So
right.
One thing I want to, you know, clarify, this is not an advice book. It's a collection of short chapters, columns, based on my experiences, you know, and those experiences are global, but I'm not bashing anyone over the head with what they should or shouldn't do. That said, you know, there are some observations about certain dating trends, which,
right.
you know, which I do share, but it's not about you have to, you know, wear these earrings and that's going to attract a man to you, or, you know, that sort of stuff. That's the kind of thing I think is insulting.
Right.
And I would never, that's not what it's all about.
So you didn't go to see Sister Ruth to get a little charm made and stuff like that, right? I'm kidding.
No, I didn't have any talismans or good luck charms or anything like that. I am extremely superstitious, but no, I've never dabbled in witchcraft.
What were some of the feedback, if any, from the individuals that were involved in the various stories? Because the other flip side of it is that, say, for example, you and I gone out and things didn't work out, and all of a sudden, hold and behold, 2 weeks from now,
Right, there you are. You're a chapter in the book. And it doesn't look very good.
Right.
Sure, that's very much an occupational hazard for anyone who's writing about their own experiences, whether that's dating, whether that's, you know, as a salesman, as anything. I mean, anything that you're writing about your life, it's considered, you know, that can be considered not quite so flattering to someone else. That's, you know, that's something to not consider, but, you know, be aware of. I wasn't looking to get sued by anything, by anyone for what I wrote. But then again, too, you know, I tried to be respectful, but then, you know, honest about what I experienced.
Right.
It's just my recollection of the events. So, mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, there were several times when I would, you know, write something and then a friend would read it and she would be like, well, that's not cool. And, you know, there was one about, there was one column about bridal showers. Well, really made a friend of mine angry because I had gone to hers and I just think they're kind of silly in general. And and she took offense to that. And, you know, and rightfully so. I mean, you know, that probably would have been a little bit offended myself had I been in her shoes. Mm-hmm. So I don't blame her for that. But again, I mean, my experiences, my thoughts, you know, and you have to take a chance sometime too. I mean, I'll never forget one of my journalism teachers telling me that if you're not pissing someone off by what you're writing or what you're reporting, you're probably not doing your job. And the truth isn't always pretty.
That's very true. And speaking about the truth, one of the things that you had mentioned before is that this book is also about someone who is in a relationship and who's married, because the principles actually about living and loving applies regardless whether you're single, married, or whatever.
Absolutely.
And what I like about it, Undertaken, you have devoted a particular article about the whole truth.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about it.
Yes, that was a column about at what point do you share the truth about a situation or a secret or whatever with the person that you're dating. It is a really slippery slope, and there's no one-size-fits-all answer. But I think the bottom line is that if that were with information that was being withheld from you, would you want to know, and would you want to be kept in the dark? And if the answer is no, I think you have an obligation to really think about, you know, sharing it. But the column originated because my then boyfriend and I were driving down to one of his triathlons, and we passed through Gainesville. And we had drinks with a good friend of mine from college and high school. We had, you know, we'd gone way, way back. And my then boyfriend had asked if we had ever dated, which we hadn't. We had made out a couple of times, and that's it. I mean, it didn't even go any further. It wasn't anything, you know, too audacious. It wasn't anything too raunchy, but I thought, you know what, I don't think he needs to know this. That wasn't the point. I think if I had just shared that it was an innocent little make-out session and nothing more, that would have been no problem. And sure, he may have gotten a little jealous had we all had drinks, but the point is, I chose not to share that information. He had to kind of pull it out of me. And that was the wrong way to go about it, because you know, we were getting closer, we were getting more involved, and it really sort of underlies the bigger foundation there is trust. You know, can you trust that someone is going to do right by you?
Right.
So, you know, that was something where I had to kind of, you know, show, you know, be honest about what, you know, about some behaviors that I've done that weren't quite so flattering. So you have to be able to turn that spotlight on yourself too, not just other people in your life. And I tried to do that as much as I could. And so I think columns and chapters like that, you know, reflect that.
Well, majority of the time, I can only speak for myself. Had it been in my situation, number one, of course, the question would not have been brought up. But then if it did, this is the flip side of things, because it's very interesting for women. You don't want to bring that up because of you have your reasons. And then for me, on the other hand, had you been very forthright about it, it wouldn't have mattered to me anyway. And the reason is because, you know what? Well, I have you. Shame on him. He didn't have you. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like, does that make sense?
It's an ego
thing for the guy, you know, say, hey, when it's all said and done, you know, she's with me. So it would not have bothered me for you to say yes.
Sure, exactly. And I don't think it would have bothered him either. I think he was just curious. You know, we were passing time in the car. You know, he's not a jealous person by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, had the conversation had the situation been reversed, I probably would have asked the same thing. So, that's not to say, too, that you have to share
everything.
I mean, I think one of the sort of hazards that relationships and dating have today is that there's not – mystery is really fading fast. We have so many ways to – you find out information on people, to Google them, to Facebook. You know, you've got every little detail of your life out there for the world to see. A lot of people do.
Right.
And I think that there's, this is kind of getting on a different topic, but I think there's a little bit of mystery that we're missing in dating today. So you don't have to share every little bit of information. But the point here was that he asked me outright, and I should have outright been a little bit more honest. And that's not to say, oh, yes, you know, we had these hot makeup sessions, and, you know, he was one of the best-looking guys in school, and everyone liked him, and, you know, he was really pursuing me, but I said no. And that's not to say, you know, that would have been necessary either. You know, just enough. And you have to consider, too, is it a lie of omission?
That's very
slippery
true.
Slope, though. No easy answers with that one. Gray area, indeed.
Very, very true. What is the greatest challenge about being a bachelor or a single person?
I think the greatest challenge is, you know, is the fact that we're living in a society where it's getting a little less, frowned upon to be single. I definitely think that the phenomenon of Sex in the City has really changed that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're shifting as a society, but it's still out there. I mean, especially around the holidays. My goodness, it's really hard to go home for Thanksgiving or Christmas or be around people around, you know, New Year's when you don't have someone, a significant other or someone special in your life, simply because people are always asking you about it. And that is just something that I think that every singleton can relate to. It just gets so old hearing, when are you getting married? Why are you still single? Why haven't you found anyone yet? I mean, that's just, it's absolutely maddening. There's a chapter I wrote about specifically on that, in the book. And there's another one where I sort of give like this back and forth between my brother and me, about, you know, just sort of this one, when I was getting more and more involved in my relationship, just this, it's first, why are you still single? And then after you find someone, it's when are you getting married? And then after you get married, it's when are you having kids?
Right.
So it's not just, you know, the singles that are getting this sort of societal speculation. It's really everybody, but that's a big challenge, I think. And another challenge too is when you are the one and you feel like, you know, everyone else around you has someone and you don't, that stinks. I mean, you know, that's just, you know, not fun to go through sometimes. So, you know, age old things, that so many people have gone through.
And the challenge is actually imposed by someone else, not the bachelor or the single person,
absolutely,
you know, themselves. So
absolutely.
The flip side of it is the greatest benefit in being a bachelor or a single person.
I always say that the greatest benefit, and I maintain this throughout the book, and just, you know, even though now I'm not single anymore, and you see it even more now, the biggest asset to being single is freedom. It is the ultimate American right. You can do what you want, with whom you want, when you want. And it's, you know, it's really something that it's hard to always keep that mindset, yes, when you would like to be with someone. But There are plenty of people, too, in relationships who miss that and would want nothing more than that. And I think we're seeing some trends even in relationships that, established marriages even, that reflect that. And we're seeing more couples who are living in separate houses.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big trend that's sort of gaining some traction, and I think it's fascinating. You're seeing more open marriages.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that we're seeing a societal shift in sort of, wow, there may be more to this, freedom thing. maybe these people who aren't married and are still single, they've got it figured out.
Very interesting. Well, how has writing the book impacted you personally?
Well, I mean, it really was a validation of these 2 years of columns that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
From a writing standpoint, it really was. It was a matter of taking these columns, putting a little bit of a polish on them, putting them in different sections and putting it in book form. I didn't have to rewrite, anything from scratch. But it's just really cool to have all that stuff together in one fell swoop.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of will find myself, this is going to sound really, really arrogant and vain, but I'm going to say it anyway. I mean, sometimes I'll just find myself, looking to reference a chapter for something or, if I'm looking, to prepare for an interview or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and I'll just look and I'll kind of get caught up and I'll be like, oh, this was a fun chapter or this was a fun column. So I think in terms of impact, it really is just the personal satisfaction of seeing all those columns in a tangible form that I can just hold and see and just have all in one place.
Mm-hmm.
And of course there's the cachet of saying, well, now I'm a published author. This is my first book. There's a lot of personal satisfaction in that. And yes, the publishing industry is absolutely on its head right now.
Mm-hmm.
Books are changing form and they're moving toward, e-format and digital, and people are getting them on their Kindle, and that's the wave of the future, and
mm-hmm.
I understand that, and I'm moving toward that too, and those are the things that are on my to-do list.
Right.
There is something so satisfying about just sort of having something tangible in your hand that you did. It's all from you. It all came from you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, extremely personally and professionally satisfying.
I like the way you finished your book with a bachelor's 2 cents.
And yes.
There are a couple of things that I like about what you mentioned, and I'm bringing this up because to me it sort of gives you a wonderful flavor of what you meant by what you wrote. The
sure.
first one is, of course, you talk about, I'm just going to bring up just one phrase, and I think it will
sure.
resonate with you. You complete me. Tell us about that resolution.
Yes, that was like a resolution, I think, for couples, if I'm not mistaken. It was in reference to sort of like what not to do. I was referencing that phrase from Jerry Maguire, and it just kind of grates on me. It did then, and it still does now. Because you're responsible for your own happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else is. And that's kind of the way that I see that, as sort of like, no, someone can compliment you
mm-hmm.
really well,
mm-hmm.
but they shouldn't complete you.
Mm-hmm.
You should be as whole as you can before you find someone. And interestingly enough, I mean, people always ask, what's the best advice you have for people who are single? Well,
mm-hmm.
the best advice I have for people who are single is stems back to that freedom thing. You have the freedom to do anything you want to do. Do it. Take advantage of your freedom. Follow your passions. Fill your life with things that you love. And that is, interestingly, the most... what's going to probably bring someone to you anyway. Does that answer your question in a very roundabout way?
Yeah, it sure did. Well, what you have is, number one, it's a wonderful phrase in a way, because I'm whole. I thought I was whole until I met you.
Mm-hmm.
and then together, two wholes make a greater whole. You know,
yeah.
The wholeness of partnering, because what happens is that it just makes it completely unique union that sort
yes.
of develop from a complete me and a complete you. So I
exactly.
understand and relate
very,
to what you're talking about. Yeah.
Very well said. That's very well said. And I would also add that we're all sort of the walking wounded out there. Everybody's got baggage. Everyone has issues.
Right.
This is not
right.
to say you should be some sort of, you know, angel, perfect, self-actualized person.
Right.
I'm not
right.
saying that at all. Right. But what I'm saying is that, you should be happy with who you are and happy being with yourself, not by yourself. You're a great company.
And that brings up that next resolution that you brought up in your book. And I want you to elaborate a little bit more about that. Learn the difference between being by myself and being with myself.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just a wonderful phrase that you brought up. And tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I mean, it really just ties back into what we had, you know, what we had just said. When you think of the phrase, I'm by myself. You heard the first song that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. All by myself. You know, that really weepy mm-hmm. song from.
Right.
From the 70s or whenever it was. No, you're not by yourself. You're with yourself. You're in really good company. And I'm not saying this to downplay the feelings of loneliness that being single, you know, comes with. I get that. Everyone has been there. It's part and parcel of the package. But when you can sort of reframe that as an opportunity to do whatever you want, you know, it's
mm-hmm.
it's a little bit more empowering. I mean, you really have this could be the only time of your life that you have the chance to do something and things just for you. You don't have to answer to anyone, and there's a tremendous amount of just power and
mm-hmm.
and possibility in that.
You hit it right on the nose when you mentioned about the fact that we sometimes envy what's not quite there yet for us, but at the same
sure.
time, we're not looking at the present moment. We feel bad because we look too far in the future, but
mm-hmm.
what we don't understand, we don't celebrate what we have right now.
Sure. And I'm not saying that you can't, that there's anything wrong with wanting to be with someone or wanting to find someone
mm-hmm.
that special. No, that's fine. I mean, I understand that. Everyone's been
mm-hmm.
there. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Where I think that it starts to, you know, to veer into dangerous territory is when that becomes sort of the blinders.
Right.
And you have this tunnel vision. And I think women are more guilty of it than men because we have that
mm-hmm.
biological clock, and that's
mm-hmm.
unfortunate. But there is no bigger turnoff than, you know, than a woman who just is just stomping her feet, you know, to the tick-tock of her clock. I mean, that there's no faster way to send men running away. And there aren't any easy answers to that, but I think it's kind of cool that, you know, that science is bringing options that weren't, you know, that weren't there before, too.
Well, happiness is found from within, not
sure.
from out there. That's what I saw in what you were writing in with those phrases. So that's
uh-huh.
the wonderful thing, what you mentioned. Well,
right.
where can someone buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Best place to buy it is from my website. It's askabachelor.com. It's askabachelor.com. That is my last name, so you can buy the book from there. It'll be available on Amazon soon. If you're in the Atlanta area, you can get it at Outright Bookstore on the corner of 10th and Piedmont. If you're in the Florida area, in the panhandle of Florida, it's sold at Bayou Books in Niceville. And one more thing, if anyone is in the Atlanta area, I will be moderating a pretty fun panel discussion tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
It's called That's What He Said, and it features, bachelorette fans here, there was a guy on there who was kind of infamous for being the bad boy, Wes Hayden. So he's going to be on that panel, as well as several other Atlanta area guys who have plenty to say about being single, being in relationships, you know, what are turn-ons, turn-offs, that sort of thing. So that is going to be great information. You can find out more about that on my website as well, askabachelor.com. So that's all I got.
Very interesting. What kind of plans do you have for the remainder of the year, being that we only have about a couple of months left?
I know. Can you believe it? This year has just flown by. Where is the time going? I think it just it gets to be much faster as you get older. It's so scary. I am really just focusing on getting this book a little bit more out there, speaking engagements and book signings, events, that sort of thing. So that's really all the plans I have for that. You know, promoting it is a full-time job, so I'm staying pretty focused on that for now. And in the future, I mean, who knows? I'm also trying to focus on my advice column, too. That's, you know, maybe there's a book in there with that. And any listeners who want pretty direct, free, funny insight advice on to their own matters of the heart, I would love to, for you to write me a letter. You can write it to askabachelor@gmail.com, and you can look for publication for that in an upcoming column. All letters are anonymous, so you don't have to worry about, you know, anybody finding you out, and I do change identifying details. So I'll be focusing on, like I said, promotion of the book and getting that advice column out into more places.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show, and do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Sure. Actually, when I had, you know, you had mentioned this might be something we would talk about, and I needed to look no further than a quote that I have sitting right beside my desk, and it's a quote from Mark Twain, and it's this: 20 years from now, you will be more disappointed by the things that you didn't do than by the ones that you did. So throw off the bow lines, sail away from the safe harbor, catch the trade winds in your sails, explore, dream, discover. I always try to have that in the back of my mind no matter what I'm doing, and it's right there by my desk so I can see it every day. And that really is the formula I try to live by, the recipe for living that I try to adhere to, because that's the stuff that's going to make you stronger, that's going to give you some really great stories later on in your life. And regret is a horrible thing to live with, and if you have a dream, I always just say go for it. You will never regret going for a dream. And
it's
at least, if it doesn't work out, at least you know.
It's beautiful. It gives us an opportunity to look forward at what we have.
Sure.
And what we will have. So that's just beautiful. Blaine, thank you so much for the great recipe
for
living. I appreciate having you on. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us this morning. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Kathleen Williams. She is an attorney, a registered nurse, and a single mom. Kathleen and I will be discussing her new book titled Single Mother, the New Father. Her book is about her success in assuming a father's role in raising her son without losing her own identity as a loving mother. For additional information about this show, future shows, and for my recipes for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. Blaine, thank you again, and have a great day.
Thank you again. You too. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.